Okay, today we are sitting outside on the balcony overlooking a beautiful Bond day. We being myself, Stephen Minkowski, joined as ever by Jonathan Harding, and we have a new guest today, Ali Farhat, who is not only our resident French guru, but is a football journalist for SoFoot, Deutsche Welle, and amongst others. So, welcome, guys.
Hello.
Hello, bonjour.
Bonjour.
Bonjour, yeah, exactly. What of the day, what of the weekend?
Yeah, and it's perhaps a coincidence that we have you on a week dominated by another certain Frenchman.
Anthony Modeste.
Anthony Modeste. So let's just get straight into it. We will talk about other things later on, but I think this is possibly the topic this weekend. So, yeah. Well, John, mind you kick us off then. What does this mean for Anthony Modeste? Is he reached new heights? Is this more of what we saw last season, or is this something special?
It's a combination of things, really. I don't think he's played as well as this in his entire career. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I believe now he's got 12 on the season, right? So he's only three away from levelling what he had last season. We've only had 9 games. So it's brilliant for Cologne.
Second only to Robert Lewandowski for Bundesliga goals in 2016.
Yeah, he nearly said Premier League then.
I almost said Premier League.
It's just, you know.
He did once upon a time play in the Premier League, apparently.
I'm sure Blackburn Rovers fans will look away now, turn off now.
Yeah, no, that's what will be upsetting these days, yeah.
No, I think he's been absolutely phenomenal. I think the difference is for a lot of teams in the mid-table is that they don't have a player like this. I mean, look at how effective Sandro Wagner has been for Hoffenheim. If you have a player who can not only score the goals, but also is an important player in your attack generally, then it can really put you in dizzying heights, which is where Cologne are at the moment. I mean, his vision, his confidence, a lot of people always say strikers, when you're in the mood and you're in confidence, and you have confidence, it makes the biggest difference. And at the moment, there's no... I back him to score almost every chance that he gets. And this is even more impressive considering he missed a penalty.
I was going
to
say,
game.
Unless it's a penalty.
You know, I think he showed that he really does have new levels of confidence to miss a penalty in that game and then still go on and score a hat-trick. I mean, that's something special.
I thought it was quite interesting how notably angry he was throughout the match. Like, he got the penalty eventually, but it was actually a handball call in like the second or third minute, which was quite unfortunate. The Hamburg player just literally was falling over and it hit his hand as it came off. He was absolutely furious at it. And he was bickering with the referee throughout the whole game. And it just struck me once again as such a huge, strong performance from him. And I know Cologne are a very good collective, but it does feel like sometimes he just grabs them by the scruff of the neck and just drags them forward.
And I think that's going to be the difference at the end of the season. You know, if they keep going this way, and you know, the loss of Dominic Moreau, now he's introduced collarbone, that's going to be a tough one for them. But if they keep going the way that they're going to go, then it will largely be because of Modeste's form, you know.
Ali, if you can give us the French perspective on this. Obviously France, the national team, is always in constant disarray, like most football teams.
Even more than England, to be honest.
Any team not coached by Yogi Löw, it would seem. Where does he stand in terms of a possible call-up? How do people... Because obviously he played for Bordeaux, but he was never as prolific as he is now. I mean, do you think his reputation has changed in France since coming to Cologne?
It depends, actually. It depends on the people which are watching the Bundesliga and which are not. Mm. The thing is, the majority isn't watching the Bundesliga, so it's always the same. Anthony Modeste left a pretty bizarre image when he left. Because he was, he scored, for example, in Bastia when he was on loan there from Bordeaux. He scored a lot of goals, but he also led the image of a guy which is missing a lot of chances, like in his first year in Hoffenheim, for example. And the thing is, most of the people actually don't know how Anthony Modeste is playing right now. They only see the score lines, and most of the people didn't see how he improved. in many parts of the game. I mean, he's he was always an athletic guy, but now he's even more important. And it's complicated because in France it's always like it's not a question of Anthony Modeste could play for France, but he would come instead of who. And we have a bunch of people of every ages, every generation. We had, for example, Gignac, we have Giroud, we have Griezmann, we have Gamero, which is doing really well at Atletico Madrid. We have the youngest, like Martial, etc. So
maybe Ousmane Dembele one day?
Pure striker. So it's kind of complicated. And this thing is...
you forgot the biggest one, actually.
Yeah, Benzema.
Benzema.
And Benzema, of course. And so it's we can do actually a team with all these strikers. And the problem is...
well, let me ask you the question. Do you want him to play for France?
Yeah, I want that Deschamps calls him to be tested, actually, to see if he can fit to the team. Because we don't know, actually. We don't know if he's good enough for the French national team or not, because he wasn't tested. Mm. And the thing is, Didier Deschamps never gave a sign to call him, even last year before the Euro.
Yeah.
Even if there were the Benzema case, for example, he never gave him a sign. He gave, for example, signs to Gignac, even if he was in Mexico. I mean, the Mexican league is good.
Does
but
he play Mexico now?
He does. Yeah. But,
oblivious to that.
Yeah, he does.
But in France, we had last year the image that Mexico is nearer to us as Germany, which is...
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, nobody comes to Germany to watch players.
But surely now, you know, the guys scoring every week all the time, even if Germany isn't considered very highly in France, you can't ignore, or he can't ignore, a player like this.
Yeah, of course. So I don't know. I would test him. I would test him to see if he can fit to the team, because he's kind of a striker, and a little bit an old school striker. But I don't know. He's so confident right now. He can really. Yeah, he can fit, actually, because he's playing in Cologne. Cologne is a good team, but. They are not full of very impressive players. I mean, what they are doing right now is very, very good, no? Don't get me wrong, but they are... In the French national team, you have a lot of talents and a lot of people which have a lot of instinct and can put Modeste in very good condition to score a goal. So, I don't know. I would test him.
It's interesting you mention the players that you say. Like, I know Giroud isn't really particularly highly thought of in perhaps Arsenal or for French fans, and he's a kind of similar type of player. But you mentioned the Cologne. When I was watching the game last night, I think I was just tweeting this, as I always do, just constant spiel of consciousness for me. But I can't think of a team who rely on one player so much. Sure, some people are saying, you know, Timo Horn's just as important. Okay, fine. But outfield players then. And I also, that's one thing. The other thing I find interesting is the comparison between him and Sandro Wagner, in the fact that they're both big, strong target men. And, you know, the best team in the country have a big, strong target man, you know. I wonder if this is like maybe the way that football is now played in the Bundesliga naturally lends itself to having a target man who, not just a slow one like Giroud or someone, but like someone who can also get around the pitch.
But you also need someone who can play that pass, you know?
Yeah.
And those players kind of, Bicevic is another example.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting because all of those clubs are in the top half of the table. Lewandowski is obviously your blueprint. But I think, you know, one thing I'd like to ask about the French team is, you know, you mentioned it earlier about, you know, the team is often in disarray and there are always problems. Do you think he's the right type of character for that team? I mean, from what I have read of him, seen of him, he seems like quite an ambitious guy, but very professional, seems to be, you know, anybody who works this hard after the number of chances he's missed at different clubs. The French team seems to have a problem with getting the right group of players mentally, you know, together. Mm. Do you think he would be a better fit for the squad than, say, a Gignac who's off in Mexico, or, you know, Giroud who likes his hair more than he does the football? And
he does have great hair, though.
He does have great hair, yes.
Yeah, I think, like I told you, I think he had to be tested even because he's also 28 now. So he's old enough to understand that he has only one chance, only one shot. So, I mean, he would have a very good attitude, a very professional attitude, and he will try to help the French national team with whatever he has. So, yeah, I mean, if it was the Anthony Modeste, which was something like 22 or 23, it won't be the same, I think. But now he has experience. He has made a lot of experiences. He had a lot of disappointment. So he really knows that now it's his time, and he has to get a reward for it. I think he has to be called up. Mm. I think. But the thing is about Modeste, we don't have to forget that Modeste is doing a really good season, but he has luck also. I think that he has someone in his shadows named Marcel Risse, which is really outstanding. And I mean, he provides almost all his assists to him. So
One of the through balls, I mean, one of the chances he actually missed last night was when Risse played like a dinked through ball, and he ends up and I think Modeste maybe chested it down and volleyed it and went wide. But some of the balls that he's been putting in, and this is without Bettencourt on the side as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's very encouraging for Clonan.
I know we just said how they were. I basically called them a one-man team, and now we're going to say
you're going to say, well, hold on, Marcel Risse. But I think it's interesting because a lot of these teams have one player that catches the eye, maybe makes the headlines or scores all the goals, and it's the same for Hertha, it's Ibisevic, or it's the same for Hoffenheim, it's Wagner. But actually, when you look a little deeper, I think that there is a lot more to these teams. You just mentioned Marcel Risse, similar player at Hoffenheim, Lucas Rupp.
You've
talked about him enough times, does the same sort of thing, really talented. And at Hertha, Mitchell Weiser, Stocker, Derrida, these players that obviously, you know, maybe don't get as much credit.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more depth to these mid-table teams, and that's why they're not mid-table anymore.
Let me ask you a question before we move on to something else. You've been watching Modeste for most of his career, I imagine. You might not have paid too much attention to him earlier when he wasn't doing much, but do you feel that this is, for example, is this just Cologne playing well and Modeste is just the figurehead for that? He's finishing the chances that they create, or do you think he has genuinely gotten better as a footballer since he left France?
No, I think he really get a better footballer, actually, because he had also the luck here in Germany to play with better players. I mean, in Hoffenheim, he was on the front of the attack with Folland and Firmino. Now in Cologne, it's a little bit different, but I don't know. He's getting old and made his experiences, and now, actually in Cologne you have someone like Marcel Risse, or you also have other guys, and I mean, now I think also that he's a striker, but he's thinking. Really thinking like he's a part of a team. A lot of old school strikers made their goal, but I mean, I wouldn't say that they play for themselves, but they have to be egoistic a little bit. For Modeste, I don't feel that it's the case. I mean, he knows somewhere that he's the end of the chain, and he has to score the goal because all his guys behind him are making effort to defend properly, and so. Yeah, he gave his best to make his job at the other part. And I think maybe before it wasn't the case, but actually when we see what he's doing right now, he is working a lot for the team.
Would the French team give him the same feeling, do you think, if he came in there?
Oh, I don't know. It's really complicated with selection because it's also, like I told you, there is a bunch of players, a bunch of possible combination. So I don't know, for example, Coman is injured. Okay, you can start, for example, Dembele, or you can start Griezmann, or I don't know, maybe when he, maybe, I don't know, it's, if he gets more minutes, maybe one day, Atem Ben Arfa. I mean, it's everything. It's
flash
like
from the past, though.
Actually, it's like, you know the game Mastermind? It's the same, actually.
John, let's wrap up by let me asking you one simple question. Next summer, are Cologne going to be 20 or 30 million pounds richer and Anthony Modeste will be wearing a Tottenham top?
No.
Why?
They will reject the offers.
You think so?
Because they will be in the Europa League and Anthony Modeste is 28. Like Ali said, he is not 23. He knows now that making any sudden moves like this is a huge risk for his career. And considering the team that he plays with at the moment and that good feeling that Ali talked about a moment ago that he has got from this Cologne team, knowing that he is finishing off the chances that everybody has worked hard for and that he's part of that team, I don't think he would give that up at 28. I think players who peak late on in their careers know what's coming for them. Obviously, the cynical side would be to say, yeah, but now he's got an opportunity to cash in late on his career. But I think if he does that, he sacrifices his opportunity to really maybe even play for France. You know, if he moves to Tottenham or if he moves to a team like that, is he really going to guarantee himself the game time? He is the number one man here in Cologne, and if he gets them into the top six, then
Ali, is John just being an old romantic and thinking that Modeste loves Cologne as much as Cologne loves Modeste?
Yeah, the thing is, when you see now in the very recent past of Cologne, Kevin Wimmer went to Tottenham. Is not playing at all.
Tottenham's just an example. I mean, it could be any Premier League team, of course.
But yeah, the fact is that Kevin Wimmer...
Or Real Madrid, if they feel injured.
Yeah. Jonas Hector refused an offer from FC Barcelona. Timo Horn said, yeah, I want to stay here because it's my home. Mm. And yeah, he's going to play anyway. And
The last great striker maybe to leave Cologne, Lukas Podolski, is still very much considered a hero.
Exactly.
In this city. And I think he may...
Yeah, I mean, Podolski's maybe an exception.
Yeah.
But he certainly treats his home, you know, with a great deal of respect. And a lot of people say, yeah, Modeste is French and he's travelled around. There's no reason why he wouldn't move again. But to be honest, as I say, having players like Timo Horn and Jonas Hector who have grown up in the area, become very strongly connected to the club, telling him, making him feel at home, probably goes a long way to him wanting to stay here. And I don't...
And it's not a bad town to live in, is it? I mean, I'm
not at all.
Just on a random note, when I interviewed Chicharito a month or two ago, he said he lived in Cologne and he compared it to
Guadalajara?
Yeah. Sorry, his hometown from Mexico.
We got Ali on to culturally educate us.
I can never pronounce it.
And to do the pronunciation.
Yeah. No, he says it's a really cool, fun, vibrant city. So I think it's the kind of town that can keep the attention of multi-million pound 20-year-old athletes. Yeah.
I think his age and the moment in his career is really, really important.
Yeah.
I don't think he would want to just make the... Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, different player, different guy. And he's been there. Let's not forget. Blackburn didn't work out. Maybe he feels a bit haunted by the memories.
I'll hope. Let's hope that Blackburn doesn't taint the wonderful nation of England for anyone. Okay, cool. Well, Modeste, he'll be playing for France next year, and he'll still be at Cologne. We've sorted that then.
And the main thing is that in order for this to really become true, we should all, if you are in favour, then make sure that you tweet using the hashtag Modeste2018.
Yes.
This is a movement.
Do you want to explain this movement, Ali?
A movement.
Actually, it's a friend of us on Twitter, which started with this hashtag. Actually, he's an avant-gardist. He started way before he started with Modeste 2016 for the Euro.
Just keep going back in time.
And it didn't work, so he decided one day to put this hashtag Modeste2018, and then we just followed him. And every time we speak about Modeste, we just trying to make some reference to this hashtag because, yeah, we are a few people which are really lovers of the Bundesliga, even if it's weird for most of the French people, like you maybe in the UK.
That's how I feel about French football, though. So it's even though I find French football weird.
Yeah, the French football was a little bit weird, but funny.
Yeah,
but funny.
Okay, so you guys, if you're listening and you agree,
yeah, exactly.
Tweet
#Modeste2018.
#Modeste2018. Okay, well, from one informed striker to one out of favour striker, another big talking point from this weekend was Thomas Muller, who was once again dropped to the bench for Carlo Ancelotti's side. John, do you want to talk us through this? Who, for anyone who's not been keeping track of this the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about it, I think it was a week ago when Bayern played, I think it was the Cup, I can't know. Yeah, no, it was the last Bundesliga game that they played before Augsburg in the Cup. And
Against... Nope, it's gone.
Yeah, it's gone.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. We're getting old.
We're getting old. It's official. And they played with Costa came back and he was really very, very good. And it just sort of looked, suddenly Bayern looked even more effective with genuine wingers. And I think this is a real issue for them going forward, or it will be maybe a luxury if you like to call it. But I don't think that they need Thomas Müller to win the Bundesliga. I think recent form suggests they've been most effective with wide players. And the reason for that is because Müller isn't a winger, first of all. And anybody who watches him for 5 minutes will know that. But secondly, the way the Bundesliga is at the moment, the way that lots of modern football is at the moment, is that teams tend to be devastating when they have players who are quick and very good in one-on-one situations. And because of Bayern's ability to circulate possession very quickly, that puts players like Douglas Costa or Kingsley Coman, when he's fit, in dangerous situations. We've seen it even more recently with Arjen Robben, who's come back into sensational form. And if you give those players...
The evergreen Arjen Robben.
Evergreen, hairless Arjen Robben. if you give him situations where he can use that speed and the one-on-one skill that he has, then more often than not, Bundesliga defenders are not equipped to deal with that kind of attacking power. So it's a real problem. I think they're more effective with players like Robben or Costa. We saw it on the weekend against Augsburg. Robben and Lewandowski were just on another planet, teaming up, scoring goals, assisting each other. And it actually seems to have freed up Lewandowski to play his game more naturally, because it's almost like Müller isn't occupying the same space. Obviously, some people would say on the flip side, well, if you take Müller out of the team, then you lack someone like Müller in the box to finish the chances, because Lewandowski is not the only player who scores goals for Bayern Munich. But in truth, Bayern's wingers are not only good at assisting goals, but scoring them as well. So I don't feel like he's necessary anymore. He is a great player to have, but you know, you're talking about players who mean a lot to this club. He is definitely one of those. He's, you know, come through the ranks. He's a homegrown talent, and he's definitely Bavarian through and through. But he's also a player that will recognise, if this trend continues, that he should be playing every week. And if he doesn't fit this system, then...
Ali, we've surely spoke about this before over numerous pints of Guinness.
surely not.
Surely not. Does Thomas Müller fit into Carlo Ancelotti's team, his formation, his tactics? Or is he perhaps like he was with Pep Guardiola, a side character, a supporting role?
I don't know. I would say that it's just a lack of confidence after the year. I mean, he had a very tough Euro, and he didn't have such big break. So he had to come back to Bayern Munich to play, etc. So I don't know. I think he fits in because the season will be long, and Robben, so, and Douglas Costa is Douglas Costa, so I think he just need a little bit rest, not physically, but also in his mind. He need to be a little bit apart. He needs to be a little bit on the side. He needs that we don't speak about him.
Take him out of the spotlight.
Yeah, a little bit, because you know. Against Augsburg, he made 2 assists, but we spoke about the penalty that he missed, actually.
Okay.
So I think he needs some rest, and he needs to be a little bit off the team, and it will be fine for him.
Yeah, John, are Bayern Munich fans screaming at their iPhones right now saying, this is what always happens when Frank Ribery and Arjen Robben come back? Now it's Douglas Costa and Arjen Robben. Whenever the wingers, for some reason, Bayern keep hiring injury-prone wingers, but whenever they have more than one available, Thomas Müller always moves down a peg, or he moves inside or something, doesn't he?
I don't know. I'm sure the Bayern fans have been shouting at us longer than they're shouting at their bench. But I think not playing Thomas Müller, as Ali says, yeah, okay, he probably does need a rest, and he's had a very long summer. Makes sense for him to be given some time to come back. But I just think that there's a trend that's happening, that's forming, that suggests that his role, because Ancelotti has already come out and said that he's going to stick to 4-3-3 stubbornly, you know, he's not going to change that. I don't really see where Müller plays in that formation unless he plays in the number nine role. I can't, you know, it seems a waste to play him out wide. His form in those situations or those positions has often shown that it's not as good as it could be. I don't know. I think the point about fitness is a big concern. You know, you're right, the season is long, and players like Robin and Ribery, you never know. Obviously, what's approaching Bayern and has approached them for a long time is something that they're reluctant to talk about, is how to deal with the post-Robin Ribery era, because they're not getting any younger, the contracts are up soon, and the discussion for all of that is approaching. I personally would give Arjen Robben an extension, but not Frank Ribery an extension. I think that Robben has more to offer. But how they handle that situation, they have to be very, very careful. You know, it's a very delicate situation. These are two players that have formed the entire ethos of the club for an extremely long time. And how Thomas Müller fits into that, I'm not sure. But fortunately for Bayern, they have endless competitions that they are playing in, so they have tactical variation. It's just my concern whether Ancelotti uses it. I think he'll be very stubborn. I don't think he'll move from the formation. But it does mean that if Bayern don't play Lewandowski, they can play Müller in attack, and that works as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think one of the most important things to know here is the kind of football that Ancelotti wants Bayern to play, or the formation. The 4-3-3 just doesn't suit Müller. I mean, I don't think Pep Guardiola was his biggest fan either, if I'm being honest with you, but he could always find somewhere for him to play, because he would play a 4-1-4-1 or any variation of that, which meant there was always space in the mid, there's always positions in the middle of the park behind the striker, which he tried to play Götze there, didn't work, Thiago Alcantara, sometimes even saw Ribery move in there, initially wanted Ribery to play number 10 when he joined the club. But that's where Thomas Müller ended up usually playing, and it was fine because he did what Thomas Müller does, he scores goals, he creates assists. But it's interesting that Ancelotti, there's two things at play here, I think, which I find quite interesting, is that obviously you have a player who's deemed world-class by many people. I know our colleague Ross doesn't really agree with that, but he's not here, so it doesn't really matter. So you have two things, and one is that you have Carlo Ancelotti, who, you know, despite showing a cool face, probably might begin to think this isn't going to be as easy as I thought it was going to be, because his start to life at Bayern Munich has been anything but seamless. We've seen Bayern play very averagely, and not doing well in the Champions League yet. They've got a game this week which they probably should win, and they should be okay, but he's been brought in to win big competitions, and sure, okay, Rome wasn't built in a day, but Bayern haven't been playing well, so he finds this formation that clicks, and he probably feels an obligation to play that, because he first and foremost he has to make sure Bayern are playing, not just winning, but playing good football, before he has to worry about keeping Thomas Müller happy. The second thing is, though, I think there's a lot of political weight behind Thomas Müller in Munich. Like you say, it's not just that he's a popular guy, he is deemed one of the, you know, the Bayern homegrown players, obviously, and he's also he's almost like a celebrity as well, just because the way he behaves and stuff on the camera. He's a very funny, charming guy. And, you know, Bayern fans might feel that he has to play, perhaps, even if it's quite clear that he doesn't fit Carlo Ancelotti's system. I mean, do you see any problems like this down the road, Ali, in the sense that, you know, if Ancelotti doesn't play Müller, then the fans might get upset him?
For me, it's not a problem, because I think actually Ancelotti came actually with the declared or non-declared objective to win the Champions League. So, I mean, Actually, I think now it's not that relevant if he plays or not, because the season of the big club begins actually on February or March.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then at this period, we will see if it's relevant or not, not to play or not to play Müller, actually. So I think that now, okay, maybe is Müller a little bit excited, but he will, I mean, people don't have to be upset that he's not playing. I mean, it's the reality of the pitch. And
Pep Guardiola faced a lot of criticism when he didn't play Thomas Müller in key matches in the Champions League.
It's probably because Pep Guardiola has a tendency to rile people up the wrong way and they'd be looking for an excuse, whereas I think Carlo probably fits the system and the hierarchy a lot better in Bayern, and therefore people are more likely to say, oh, okay, it's all right, it's Carlo, you know.
Mm. Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, Carlo Ancelotti knows what he's doing. I mean,
yeah,
there's no question. Okay, Müller doesn't play, but I mean, it's not, for me, it's not that.
Well, let me turn it around. Do you think Thomas Müller will be okay with not playing every week?
I think yes.
Yeah.
I think yes, because if he, maybe not at the beginning, but I mean, he's smart enough to know that he has to work, or to. Maybe he's smart enough also to know that he has to change something in his game. I mean, even if he's maybe staying longer than Carlo Ancelotti in Munich, I mean, he knows that he have to work. So I'm confident, actually. For me, it's okay if he's not playing, and I think he will reacting in a way or in a other way. I mean, for example, I hope that it won't be injured, but for example, Robert Lewandowski, I mean, it's the same. He played the whole season, then the Euro, and then he's back, and he also had some lacks in front of the goal.
Yeah.
And he's still playing. He worked hard because he's a hard worker, and on this weekend he scored 2 goals and made 1 assist. So he kept working. Even if Thomas Müller is not playing from the beginning, if he works and gets his chance to go in, he will use the chances, because that's what he is. It's his football.
Okay then.
He said so. Ali says.
Ali gets the final word.
He does.
We'll draw a line under it. Nothing to talk
Absolutely.
About.
Nothing to talk about.
So from one false crisis to one very real crisis, we have the team who Cologne beat last night, which are of course Hamburg, a team with a huge amount of history, respect, tradition in the Bundesliga, but also a team that are right down the bottom of the Bundesliga and don't look as though they're going anywhere fast. John, is this just full-blown crisis mode for Hamburg? A team, a club, I guess, who are used to this sort of thing, but this one seems critical.
Yeah, I think they've got used to it, to be honest, in recent seasons, but this is quite an exceptional circumstance, to be honest with you. I mean, it's not just a question of a lack of performance. You know, Dietmar Beiersdorf said that they're in a crisis of results at the moment. I think that's a fair way to put it when you haven't won a game in 9. And they don't even look like winning a game, and I think that's the problem. But, I mean, the weight of pressure that continues to build on the group of players there every week is immense. They know that the longer that you don't get your scoreboard ticking over, as it were, the harder it is for you. The individuals on the pitch are certainly good enough, I think, in a number of positions, and yet as a team, as a group, there isn't a cohesive nature to them. You know, there's not really a team out there. I'm really not sure why Marcus Gisdol took the job, knowing what he was walking into. But he is also running out of time to show that he has still got it. You know, I think it's interesting to see the direction that a lot of football is moving towards these days. Each club is different, but this whole focus on stats and, you know, analysis to the point where you just, you know, every single second is looked at and reviewed. It's very interesting, but it poses an interesting question. How effective is a coach like Marcus Gisdol for Hamburg? You know, what kind of situation is he walking into? How is he going to change that? It doesn't look like he's changed it enough. They're still making stupid decisions. They have some talented players, Bobby Wood, Filip Kostic, but these are players that need a focus, a sense of direction, some discipline. There's nothing there, and that's what worries me. And I think the best thing for them would genuinely be to be relegated. And, you know, they get rid of the clock, this whole we're the only immortal Bundesliga team, you know, thing that hangs around them, and just rebuild. You know, Stuttgart, it's tough for them, but they've gotten in a young manager who's very exciting, Hannes Wolf. They're going to slowly build their way back up. There are other teams who are trying to do the same. It's not an easy thing to do. You know, Kaiserslautern are struggling in the second division. But I think it's the right thing for them to do. But it's easier said than done. They're not going to spend the next however many games just losing. So,
Ali, Hamburg haven't won in Cologne since 12th of February 2012, I think it is. So they were never expected to win this game in any stretch of the imagination, but they just seemed quite hopeless throughout the game, didn't they? And it was just, when you look at that team, do you see any hope?
No. No, frankly not. And it's very sad because the stadium in Hamburg is always full, and it's very difficult for the people over there right now, even in the other side of Hamburg, in St. Pauli.
Yes.
So football in Hamburg are not very matching this year. No, but the thing is, I don't see any hope because, I don't know, it's they mess up everything they do, actually. And
there's a stat that you mentioned before we came on air, which I think was interesting.
Yes.
They have more red cards, 3, than goals scored, 2.
Amazing.
And points.
Awesome. Yeah. That says everything about Hamburg.
There seems to be something really rotten at the core of this team, because, I mean, you have to really go out of your way to sign players like Bobby Wood and Filip Kostic and still be so bad. I mean, the interesting thing was that I think maybe Hamburg's most useless player last night was Kostic, actually. He kept getting into positions, and his passing was just atrocious. Like, Hamburg maybe could have scored 2 or 3 goals last night if... they didn't have too much trouble getting in behind the Cologne defence, but whenever they did, they just couldn't find the right pass. And, you know, last season you would put your house on Kostic finding the right pass for a goal. And then Bobby Woods, who's the only guy who has scored, and he was scoring goals for fun last season in the Zweite Bundesliga, he then elbows someone off the ball because he's out of sheer frustration and gets sent off. And this just seems to characterise the club right now.
But chaos breeds chaos, you know. If you've got some investor from somewhere who's putting the money in and who sort of gets to say something and make some decisions, and then you've got Beiersdorf, who looks like a guy who is, you know, like a substitute teacher, you know. He doesn't really know what he's doing, saying, yeah, okay, we'll get this guy in, he's all right. And I just feel like there's this... Maybe it feels like a lack of professionalism at the club, from the top to the bottom. I think if you're a player and you walk into that situation and you can feel that, then, you know, that's going to be really tough.
Should they have sacked Labbadia?
No. No, because I think that Labbadia was also loved by a part of the players, and now I have the feeling that Gisdol is not accepted by most of the players, actually. So
why do you say that?
I don't know. I mean, he tried to change some things when he came, and it's not really accepted. I have the feeling that it's not really accepted. But actually, John, you said maybe Hamburg has to be relegated, but I don't think... it's a real question. I don't know how many valid contracts they have for the second Bundesliga. That means that most of the players have to go next year.
Well, we saw that with Stuttgart, and they had a clearance.
But maybe that would be a good thing, you know? I mean, not for Hamburg, but... no, sorry, not for those players, maybe, but for Hamburg. Maybe there are a lot of players in that team that are just... that need to leave that environment, or they need to start again. because I get the feeling it's just too easy at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't think it's the players the problem. I mean, I think you're right. If they did get relegated, they would lose these players, and I think that would be a problem.
But they need to start again. I think they need to do that because they've been living on this identity of we're this immortal Bundesliga team, you know, and yet
they need some modesty.
Yeah, absolutely.
They need to be humble.
And they need to start again. Just because you can sign Filip Kostic and Bobby Wood in the summer doesn't mean that you're going to be amazing.
Mm.
And I think they've had that every summer. They've had these like, oh, we brought Van der Vaart back. We did this, we did that. And they've got away with it. You know, most recently by the skin of their teeth in the absolute last moment of the last situation. But, you know, I think it would be effective for them. A real reset button, you know, start again. Get rid of the people that are not right. And I don't just mean on the pitch. You know, you need to have a comprehensive change in the club.
But would that change, though, Ali? I mean, like John mentioned, there's obviously this billionaire who puts money in. I think he now has a 7% stake in the club, I think. But long before that, he was just giving them blank checks to do what they wanted, to buy players and things. And he's funded a number of the erratic transfers that we've mentioned, and Van der Vaart's probably the most obvious one. He's not going anywhere if they get relegated, is he? Or the people that he potentially, or who answer to him, they're not going to leave if Hamburg get relegated, are they?
I don't have the feeling, but it would be a great thing to reboot actually Hamburg and to bring the people which made you successful. Like, I mean, I don't know how he could help, but for example, Horst Rubisch, the former German U21 team, is available. Maybe you have to call Maggot back. Kevin Keegan also. I don't know. I mean, right now it's just a mess, and nobody is really helping the club. And they need to maybe to get to the second Bundesliga, and maybe they really need to go back to their roots. So it's complicated. And the role of Klaus Michael Kühne, the investor, I don't know it. It's complicated. I don't know. It's Hamburg.
It's Hamburg.
But you see, that's exactly it, you know. And I think they need to get rid of that situation where people say, "Oh, it's Hamburg," you know, because that's what they've become over the last few seasons. And they're no longer everyone saying, "Oh, it's such a shame that this great club has so much history and tradition that it just become, oh, it's Hamburg."
Mm.
You know, this should be a team that's in the top 10, you know, consistently.
No.
If not on the fringes of Europe again. And here they are, unable to get a point, regularly, to win a game.
Yeah, but they are going to win against Dortmund next week, like they always do, even if they're in crisis. Actually, when they are in crisis, they always beat Dortmund.
That's true.
Last year, 3-1.
That's true.
This year is almost impossible.
But does that put Dortmund in crisis?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. There's almost a hint of anger in your voice there, Ali, at the thought of Dortmund losing a game. But I'll maybe leave it there.
Yeah.
But the most important thing, actually, they are doing this Hamburg this year when, as Uwe Zilla is having 8 years. And I mean, it's terrible. It's a fucking symbol, actually. Really, I mean, he will get 80 next week or in 2 weeks, and they are last. On the bottom of the Liga, and there is no reason to make a party for him.
No,
actually,
definitely.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I think. We always talk about how the Bundesliga is full of these sleeping giants, and Hamburg seem to be the most obvious example. But the team you just mentioned, they're Dortmund. They weren't too far off what Hamburg are now, once upon a time, were they? And before this resurgence and before the turnaround, you know, when they're on the verge of bankruptcy, you know, Dortmund weren't too far off that, were they? So
yeah, I mean, it's not beyond. Maybe they just need to give Bayern a call.
Get some money off Bayern.
Borrow some money, get rid of Kühne.
Well, of course, Bayern need Hamburg in the division for the North South rivalry.
This is the argument. I mean, look, as much as I think it would be the best thing for Hamburg to be relegated, the Bundesliga needs Hamburg.
Mm.
You know, Ali said, you know, 50,000 people, it's a huge stadium, got a lot of supporters.
Huge, beautiful city as well.
Great city, and you need more than just Werder Bremen up there, you know, like...
Hey, they might also be joining them. You never know.
But you,
they will stay.
But you're talking about a club that has a huge following, and on away days it's most noticeable. You know, Hamburg bring fans, you know, and they... I think for Bundesliga, a league that has the, I think I'm right in saying, has the highest attendance on average, right, in Europe. I think that's
The highest, most highest attended football. I mean, American football has higher, but I think.
But yeah, but, I mean, soccer-wise. And I think you lose Hamburg, you lose a big percentage of that attendance. And I think that's a real problem for them. You know, Bundesliga's marketing image is marketing its image on great stadiums, great experience, okay, attacking football, maybe some weeks... That's the case, some weeks it's not, but you lose something of that traditional back-to-the-roots kind of football if you lose Hamburg. Even if we all know that actually at the moment Hamburg is just a joke, in the heart of that, there is still a big football club.
Yeah, I mean, I hate the word tradition. It seems to be the excuse for anything here in Germany in terms of football, but I think the Bundesliga without a team in Hamburg would be like the Premier League without a team in Liverpool or Manchester or something, you know. Or a team, no team in Marseille in France. If you could possibly imagine the thought.
It happens. After the
World Cup. As a man from Paris, I'm sure you're okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We had in our recent past a first division without Marseille. It was just after they won the Champions League. Yeah, they got relegated some troubles.
So,
but yeah, it's hard to imagine actually.
So we want Hamburg to be good, but we think maybe relegation is the best way of doing it.
And I think that, you know, the clock is a joke that's a bad one now, because it's not even. It's like a monkey on their back, and they need to get rid of it. They just need to get rid of it and get past it and just be a normal club for a bit so that they can get back to being the club that they need to be.
It reminds me a little bit of Schalke almost, in a different way that, you know, they have a huge monkey in their back. They haven't won the Bundesliga so long, or even general titles. And it seems to be the thing that's the shadow that's cast against them all the time.
I think that the difference there is, of course, that Hamburg had a great spell back in the past, whereas Schalke have had their chances to do that and have missed out in heartbreaking fashion in some in some seasons. But they're of the same group. They're of the same group of clubs that need to be in the Bundesliga. So as much as I want them to stay, I prefer them to go down, reset and come back and then be here for 15, 20 years. You
know? Lovely segue there, because before we wrap things up, we of course have to talk about the derby.
The biggest derby in Germany.
The biggest derby in Germany, but also possibly the most boring game in Germany this weekend. It was 0-0.
Gladbach on Friday night.
Yeah, I was in the pub watching that, so I was okay with that one though. But when you're working, trying to do this one, it was driving me. In fact, I wasn't. I was watching. I was also having a beer watching with Ali.
What are you talking about? I worked both of those 0-0s, thank you very much.
Okay, fine. You have the authority on this, but 0-0. Let's begin instead with Schalke for a change, because we do talk about Dortmund a lot on this podcast. Is this Weinziel's revolution slowly but surely kicking into gear?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm a bit tired of the back and forth between it's here, it's not here, it's on, it's off. But I think 7 games unbeaten puts them in a really strong position. And I think it's not just the form, which ironically has been founded in the Europa League. You know, that they were really struggling in the Bundesliga, and yet winning in the Europa League has been their remedy. You know, it's like nobody likes the Europa League until the quarterfinals, unless you're in it and you're not one of the big teams. And only then does a team like Schalke say, hey, okay, you know, we're going to treat this competition properly. We're winning games. And they've taken that form out and they've started to play well in a situation in the Bundesliga. And what's interesting is they've done it with a back three, most notably.
Which he played against Dortmund.
Which he played against Dortmund and was extremely effective. You know, they... In the first half, I thought that Schalke were brilliant. You know, they held Dortmund at bay. They didn't, you know, Dortmund didn't have a shot in the first half. So, you know, defensively, they were all in the right position. And they going forward, they were very effective. They didn't commit too many men forward. They stayed relatively well positioned. And it meant that they were never overexposed to a Dortmund team who we all know have a lot of pace on the counter-attack, right? So it was just a very sensible game plan that Schalke finally put into place. Definitely on the up, definitely on the right road towards the kind of football that Bainzer wants, the kind of with the kind of players that Heidel wants. We've been talking about how they had a really slow start. Gladbach had a really slow start last year, still managed to finish in the top four. There's no reason why Schalke...
Gladbach had a horrendous start, not a slow one.
Yeah, okay.
Six defeats.
Yeah, but Schalke didn't have anything too dissimilar to that. So,
of course, sure.
I mean, I think we talked about earlier when we were talking about Müller, the season is long. And I think it's very easy to be like, okay, 2 weeks of two bad results and there's a problem, you know. On the flip side, I don't want to suddenly say seven games unbeaten, Schalke are amazing. But I do think that we are finally seeing exactly how Weinzer wants to play. This kind of idea that Schalke were going to be this great team this season is very premature. Maybe next season when Weinzer's had a bit more time. You're talking about a side that is effective. It's very Augsburg. You could see the traces of what he did when he was Augsburg's coach. You know, they go forward, they don't overcommit, they're sensible. Okay, if they hadn't had DeSanto in attack, maybe they would have had a few more goals. But they were just a much improved side. And in the second half, when they were the second best team and Dortmund got on top, they held against them. They were committed. They fought. You know, they really battled. And Kolasinac was the embodiment of that for me. Yeah, okay, he should have probably been booked in the first 5 minutes for a very full-blooded challenge. But, you know, that block on the line was absolutely phenomenal. He has to get that right, times it superbly. They just looked like a really committed team. And I think that's very encouraging.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing now is a good complement to both Christian Heidel and Weinziel. And I think Schalke are a good example of how patience can pay off in a sport that it's often thrown out the window.
Definitely.
I mean, the way that Schalke started this season, if this was the previous administration, they would have been down there with Hamburg right now.
Chop and change, yeah.
And of course, Weinziel, a coach who can go to Dortmund and get a point with DeSanto playing up front, for me, he earned his wages that week. But Ali, you obviously have a lot of you report closely on Dortmund. You wrote about this game specifically, I think, on Dortmund maybe.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to talk about the troubles that Dortmund are in, because we talked about that a lot last week and the week before, but maybe just specifically the tactics that Thomas Tuchel played. Do you think he picked the right team? Do you think Dortmund played well enough? Or do you think Weinziel was the best of the two coaches on Saturday?
I think Weinziel was the best of the two coaches, but we must not forget that a lot of people in Dortmund was injured or partially injured. For example, Aubameyang, I don't think he was on 100% of his form. And there were a lot of young people also, which were playing their first derby, for example, Dembele. Mm. And
Pulisic played last season, of course.
And it's just a question of Dortmund has to be patient. And I would say they tried their best in the second half time, at least. Maybe if they had played like this in the first half, the result would have been different. Maybe. And
I mean, we forget that Dembele hit the post, you know. Dortmund could have still very easily won this game. Well, not easily, but they could have quite.
Yeah, but
possibly.
It was quite a good performance of Dortmund when you look after the context, etc.
Mm.
It was a good performance, and I think it brings some confidence actually for the next weeks.
Even if they are going to lose to Hamburg,
then it's international break, and then they will play against Bayern Munich. but honestly, I think you don't have to throw up all the things that happens during the game. I mean, I think that there were good things. But maybe they should have made more pressure on the first half. Actually,
I thought Dortmund really lacked certain players. Perhaps I thought I was really quite surprised that Kagawa started, actually.
He's been very poor.
But even if he was on form, it just doesn't seem like the kind of game for me that you want to play Kagawa. And it's just reminded me a lot of an old firm derby, actually, back in Glasgow, in a sense that it's just tackles flying everywhere. There wasn't
but he knows that derby. It's not like he's unaware of it.
I was saying to you, I think, at the time when we were watching it, when Sebastian Rode comes on at halftime, you're like, well, why the hell didn't he play? That seemed like the perfect game for a player like Rode. I thought Götze, once again, showed signs of his old self. He should have scored, but that little trick to get there, that was incredible.
That's like a YouTube clip of him in the past.
I know we don't like to glamorise individual moments of skill that don't lead to anything, but...
No, because if we do that, Dembele would have won the Ballon d'Or.
Exactly, but
what he would do.
I'm sure if Dembele had done that and then didn't score, we'd be complaining because it's Mario.
I'd be complaining for sure.
But it's not just that. Against Union Berlin in the week early in the week, I know they're not the best of opponents, although they almost beat Dortmund. I think Götze is slow. I think it's obvious now that he's getting better. He's no longer the player he was at Bayern. He's not there yet, obviously, and I'm sure if Dortmund had a full roster of players, he might not have been given as much time to try and, you know, iron out the creases. But I like that he's slowly but maybe surely becoming back to the player he was. I thought Dortmund really missed Schmelzer, actually. I said to you at the time, Ali, I think Pasalic on the left really it lacked. I mean, every time he got the ball out left, Schmelzer would usually be there to swing a ball in. Pasalic had to cut inside. It never really worked. And I totally agree about you in terms of Aubameyang. I thought he only had
four touches in the first half.
I just don't think Aubameyang's actually looked very good at all this season. He's a bit like Lewandowski, actually. And neither of them are playing particularly well, but you look at their stats on paper, you're like, well, they're still scoring the goals, you know. So maybe that's just a sign of how good they are, that when they play poorly, they can still win games or score goals.
But I think more than anybody, though, Dortmund miss Guerrero. Huge player. I mean, and he came on, I think it was 15, 20 minutes from the end, and immediately... There was a boost in Götze's positioning, and he made a big difference. And he is he's become a huge player for them. You know, they bought him thinking that he was going to be playing at left back, or we all thought he was going to play. No, he's very effective in midfield and on the left, even in the middle. And I think he wasn't fully fit either, right? So I don't think so. When you are looking. So Dortmund have gone out in the summer and bought all these players, and they've certainly boosted their squad. But in these situations, they were still lacking one or two players to make the difference. And you can't blame them for that, because they have the squad depth. But it's just that injuries have haunted this club for a number of years, and they still do.
Guerrero, obviously a boy from your hometown, Paris. Despite being Portuguese, he's French. I didn't know this actually until you told me. He speaks very little Portuguese, actually. Born and raised in Paris.
Yeah,
it's interesting. But he, alongside maybe other players like, you know, Dembele and stuff, these are young guys who've came into this squad. Do you think, and I'm only asking you because we talk about this every week, and I'd love your opinion on this, but do you think sometimes there was a really good, Rory Smith wrote a really interesting article at Times, actually, about how Dortmund are, everyone's very envious of the amount of young, exciting players Dortmund have, but do you think sometimes this team lacks experience? Do you think these young players have been asked to do too much?
It depends on what you're waiting for, I think. I mean, if you...
Well, what are Dortmund fans waiting for?
That... Right now, with the context and the squad that it is in Dortmund, you expect that all the young players improve more and more, that they learn a little bit, like Dembele must learn a little bit of tactical aspects, and Bremo also, and you just hope that the guys that you hire, like Schürrle or Götze, bring some experience in it, and then you make a mix, and then you see what happens. But I mean, Champions League is a goal, the title not yet, I think, and it's just I personally would say I just wanna see that all the guys are working together and just listen for Thomas Tuchel, which is a great coach, but also I think a great man, in the sense of he can, when he said when he's tells to a player, I'm gonna make something of you, he's really making it, I think. Like how Aubameyang improved last year, for example. I mean, most of the people which came on the summer have a huge of potential, and yeah, it will come, I think. Okay. I'm very optimistic about it. So now they played 0-0 against Schalke. It's a derby. It has its
a very quiet derby. It felt, it didn't seem like the usual fiery emotion behind it. The derby between Schalke and Dortmund.
Yeah, it changed a little bit, but not in the tribunes, of course. That's all the same. But yeah, it changed a little bit because, yeah, you have some identification marks, a Schalke, like Benedikt Höwedes, Max Meyer, which grew up with this rivalry. But in Dortmund, who is from Dortmund, actually, or who? I mean, Weidenfeller is on the bench, even if he's not.
Schmelzer is missing. I mean, he is obviously not.
Omar Kroos.
Yeah, true.
For these persons, is the game a very special game. Yeah. I mean, last year at Schalke, when he didn't play, he was really angry.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really disappointed. So, yeah, maybe Dortmund had a lack of marks on his side. So, and I mean, there is no animosity since a guy like Kevin Großkreutz not here, or for example, back in the days, Gerard Asamoah, who were told, okay, Asamoah, you are bad the whole season, but we know that against Dortmund you are going to be good. Happen every time, actually, and yeah, maybe that's the reason why it wasn't that maybe a little bit boring as an objective football fan.
I think that's a good point. I think there were, you know, people talk about a lack of experience in the team, but a lack of characters that know what this game means is certainly the case in Dortmund's side on the weekend. I think they have a lot of talent, but they needed players who were really aware of what it meant and who had experienced this kind of game before, who were ready to put their body on the line. And I felt like that was more the case on Schalke's team.
Yeah, because they have also a bunch of players which are, I mean, from Gelsenkirchen or the area.
Exactly.
Ralf Fährmann, Benedikt Höwedes, Max Meyer, even Leon Goretzka. Even if he's from Bochum.
Yeah.
I mean.
Is Sebastian Rode from Dortmund?
No, he's from.
He's a Dortmund fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's from the area of Frankfurt, I think.
That makes sense.
I mean, even someone like Kolasinac, who I feel like has a very strong identity with the club. You know, like players who have grown into okay, there was a lot of talk last summer about him nearly leaving and whether he wanted to go, but on the pitch he looks fully committed, and that's what you want in these games. And yeah, I think the point about Roda playing would have been, I think he was the perfect kind of player, very combative. You want people who are going to tackle, maybe even get booked, that's fine. You want that kind of aggression in this game. I felt like Dortmund bent a little bit in the face of that aggression, because I felt like Schalke were way more aggressive.
I wonder how much of that you mentioned, like the lack of like local, you know, patriotism. Maybe, I mean, you also now have two coaches in charge of one of the two most feistiest clubs. Are both very cold tacticians, and I mean, I know Thomas Tuchel can get angry, but
especially if you celebrate.
Yeah, he and Weinziel are both this kind of modern style of coaches that are very professional. They're not just ex-pros who are in charge of a football team. They're purposely designed coaches who maybe I mean you can easily compare Tuchel to Jurgen Klopp, who was always the most animated person in the stadium.
Klopp is a very passionate character, though, who perhaps has a better connection with his changing room than Thomas Tuchel, you know. But I feel like Thomas Tuchel has a better game plan often than Jurgen Klopp. I mean, that's a whole different podcast, really, that comparison. But I think if you're not going to motivate yourself as a player for a game like that, I think it's more on the player. I think you want from your coach, you want clear instructions. And yeah, okay, in an ideal situation, they'll give you an extra bit because, you know, they'll remind you how big the game is. But I think you have to know as a player what this game means to the fans, to the people in that area. Someone held a sign up saying winning this game or this game is like the title. That is what it is for these people. We can finish 10th, but we still beat Schalke twice. You know, that's what it is. And I think you need more people in the team who know that. And that will come in time. Dortmund, I think, are going to be very exciting next season. You know, when we sat here next season, Christmas time, January, all of these players will have a season and a bit under their belt. Very exciting team. And Tuchel will have them knowing the system better, and he'll know it better. And
maybe Schalke too, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So,
and Leipzig would have won the league by then. So,
sorry. Let's hope so. Okay, so we'll call it quits there then on what was hopefully another interesting podcast. As ever, if you have any lovely comments you'd like to make as to how much you enjoy the podcast, or you can't stand it. I mean, if you really, really, really hate us, you can get in touch at The Tribune Podcast. On Twitter. We're also at the same under the same name on Facebook. And of course, we forget to say this, but if you are listening on an iPhone right now, please do hop on iTunes and give us a rating and leave a quick comment, because I know it sounds arbitrary, but it actually does help us a lot in terms of getting our name out there on the podcast. I don't know, the podcast shop? I don't know what the hell's called.
I like that. The podcast shop. The virtual podcast shop.
So, Ali, where can our followers find you on Twitter?
Under the name Der Pariser, the Parisian.
Great name.
The Parisian.
It's the handle that we all want.
The Parisian. I've never noticed.
Der Pariser, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Also the condom in German.
I think it works. You know, it's cool and funny.
Yeah. And maybe appropriate. John, you're obviously John Blogs 90.
Oh no,
I'm nowhere near as good as this.
You always remember. You always forget. Why does everybody say 90? 66,
and I'm at S Binkowski. So, yeah, once again, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.